5 o'clock, and time for 2 hours of Civil Rights Report here with me. I'm your host, Baptist Field Robert Nurse, in a bathrobe, actually. Skidmark Bob here, my monitor, who's making sure that I don't put out any inappropriate non-collectivized thoughts, will vouch for that fact. We've got lots of stuff coming up, mostly about the last shitty council meeting, and about the upcoming response by the community to the refusal of City Council to restore human rights to homeless people in Santa Cruz. So stay with us and join us at 427-3772. Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's got a winning team. Good to be back with you here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. I'm a little bit rusty at the controls, but as I said, controlling me is my Fuhrer, Skidmark Bob, and I'm about to actually open up mic 2 here and have him join us. Hi, Bob.
Check 1, check 2. How am I coming over there, Robert? See those needles going?
Some needles are needling me and probably needling the listeners even as we speak. So, Bob, I know that you're an old cop watcher and apparently a child watcher as well.
Yes.
as life goes on.
Yeah.
But you've been doing a lot of work, like the old 9-to-5 or whatever your...
Yes, 9-to-5, doing my job.
...particular term of servitude is.
Raising a child and dealing with free radio.
You didn't make it, I noticed, to the city council's hoo-brah-ha back on Tuesday night.
I was working at my wage slave job. My working class whore job that I have to in order to, feed my child and clothe my child and feed myself, have a place to rent, overpriced rent here in Santa Cruz.
So, you nonetheless put in lots of time on the radio, and I guess with this wonderful new studio, I should tell the listeners, our studio space has expanded by 100%.
Right.
I mean,
yep.
It's...
We added on. No, we didn't add on.
Expanded like a huge amoeba, almost like dividing in half. And the studio is really, really
nice.
Impressive stuff. And but
you
if
can breathe in here now, not
you
like
can breathe and no
we're
one's
out of
smoking
the closet,
in here.
We're closet-free radio.
It is.
Oh,
it is really
station.
Great. There's a child care area where the children can run around, criss-cross, eat your heart out.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, it does work, and my child just told me that he has to go. Do
oh,
two.
You're letting your child run the show. I see.
You want to tell him? Tell him
you
got to
go, G. There you have
it. From him?
From the mouths of babes, so to speak.
Do you feel confident here under the control?
I feel completely in control here, and if I'm not, I will be one of these days.
Okay. Well, have a good show, and I'm out of here.
Thank you, Skidmark Bob. And that, of course, was Skidmark giving me my orientation and the new, bigger, newer, cooler Free Radio Santa Cruz. which, of course, you can't see, but most important, you can hear. And even more important than that, others can hear you if you call in. And the call-in number, I want to remind you, is 427-3772. Got to kind of look around the studio to see how things have changed. Wow, I've got to wear my glasses here. Couple of announcements before we begin. The Alliance for Democracy, which supported the still-fighting campaign to end the sleeping ban, is having a meeting on Saturday, a spring gathering, actually, from 6:30 to 8:30, March 27th. Dinner, networking, guest speaker, the infamous ponytailed Dan Hamburg. And Dan is an articulate guy. I last saw him at one of our ill-starred but well-intentioned sleeping ban benefits at Palookaville. Dan's a good guy. He's talking about beyond economic absolutism, creating an economy that is people-centered, not profit-centered. At the First United Methodist Church on Saturday, Fellowship Hall, 250 California Street, Santa Cruz, between Bay and Laurel. And, of course, for all of you money bags out there, you fork out between $8 and $12 if you can, and that'll give you food, reservation, speeches, and the satisfaction of knowing that you're supporting a Green Party guy who actually favors sensible things like decriminalizing marijuana, decriminalizing homeless people, I presume things like rent control. Perhaps David Silva, one of our resident Greens, will call in later in the show to give us a more specific sense of what the old Green Party is up to these days. I'm a little green about the gills with our so-called Green Party Tim Fitzmaurice, council member, who I believe is a part of the current sellout of the homeless around the sleeping ban. He's one of those big, brave new council members elected last November who, with Crone and Sugar, have failed to restore the basic right to sleep for homeless people at night, although he is extremely sensitive and concerned about the rights of bigoted individuals to give speeches at city council without the hint of a catcall. And I guess that's his sense of democracy. It's democracy for the rich and the comfortable. I always thought, of course, the purpose of good radicals or even good progressives was to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted, but I always wanted to say that. It's a little too cute, I know. Anyway, we're going to be reviewing that city council meeting in the 2 hours ahead, and I think we have a phone line that is working. Let me double check. Yeah, I think so. It looks like it's working. It sounds like it's working. It is 427-3772 if you want to join us on the air. And, well, we'll wait for a call, or we'll wait for the end of this next song. I think we'll give you a little music, and then we'll go into the next interview, which will be with John Vance of Berkeley. But, of course, you live callers will take precedence if you've got something to say to us. So stay with us.
Decoration, right around holiday time. And homeless shelter, it was quite cold, a little bit chilly. I set my 101st Airborne book down, and I zipped up my jacket. And the police officer says, "What in the hell are you pissing on the street for?" I said, "No, I'm not. What are you doing?" He said, "I'm zipping up my jacket."
This was a cop in a passing squad car?
Yes, yes. I don't think they have the right to harass citizens in the United States. I think if he was really concerned on whether or not I was urinating there, he would have got out of his squad car and checked out the area. He said he was going to run me into jail for urinating. And I told him, "I'll have your badge. You better stop harassing me." And he took off and called me a fucking asshole. Well, that man is exactly what he described me as. Thank you very much. I don't know his name, but I have his license number from the squad car and the time.
About what time did this happen?
It was approximately 4:15, 4:30, right after dinner.
And this was yesterday on Sunday afternoon?
Monday afternoon. Yes.
And this was like, we're of course standing here at this table giving out hot coffee and street spirits and such, trying to get people to come to the city council sleeping ban meeting tonight. We're in the front driveway of the Homeless Services Center. It was near this area?
Yes, it was just before the tracks here. Once we leave here and turn a left, it's approximately a quarter block.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they were in here trying to talk to the people here. There were several other police officers. I know that, you know, there are some people that are not completely legal, but hey, we're not all guilty of what they think.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. I've been harassed several times.
Now, you sleep outside, or?
Yes, I do.
Any hassles?
No, because I go to a place where they can't find me. I don't like this. You know, I understand that the cost of living is up so high, and I do have an income. I've been hurt, and I collect disability.
Uh-huh. Have you heard of any tickets that people have been getting, or hassles from police around sleeping, or has it been mostly just for this other kind of stuff?
No, I pretty much keep to myself, so I don't politic and find out what's going on with other people, but I will go to the meeting tonight. Thank you. Huh?
Thank you. I wish I had a watch.
I wish I had a watch. Anybody?
John Vance has bumper sticker land in front of Amoeba Records.
Bumper sticker land.
You got your no on 227. I see you have some new bumper stickers. Practice random acts of kindness and senseless acts of beauty. That's been around for a while.
Oh, yeah, that's actually Ann Herbert. Ann Herbert did that here in 1986. Or, no, 82, actually, 82.
Well, you actually, John, you were around last summer and fighting the attacks on young people here. I don't see a lot of young people. There were a few still up.
Yeah, he's probably a shopper.
So it looks like not too many.
If you don't look like a consumer, then you're probably going to be, you know, getting a few problems, you know, ID checks or, you know, maybe some friendly conversation from the local Gestapo.
Yeah, this is John Vance.
Armed and defenders of the public order. The public order. Got to keep order.
Keep order.
Yeah, United Nations, they're definitely wanting to make sure that we don't get too screwed up because they might have to come in and maintain order.
Yeah. So the Berkeley Police Department, I don't see too many cops on the avenue today. Does this mean that they feel like they've done their job, now they can go home, or what's the story?
Well, they don't want to scare the shoppers away.
Oh, I see.
Generally, when there's a lot of shoppers out here, you won't see a lot of police. It's the police come out during the weekdays when there's not a lot of shoppers around.
How are the students taking to this? Are they standing up and supporting their fellow poor people?
I believe it appears to me that most students are, you know, being typical supporters of the status quo.
Potato heads. I don't want to insult potatoes.
Sounds like Santa Cruz.
It does. And how's the business? You're still selling the. Are you in business? Are you making a living?
It actually started picking up again out here yesterday. So as far as finances for community activists, we're, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's starting to pick up a little bit, and that makes me feel better. But I really do miss the kids hanging out here by Amoebas that were arrested by the police from mid-October until the middle of December in order to have a great street fair.
And what's happened to those kids? Have they just gone out of town, or in jail, or what's happened?
There was I think there was a lot of intimidation. Told the kids that they would rather they would go somewhere else, or that they wouldn't hang out on Telegraph. Not to mention that they gave them 30-day jail felony sentences for marijuana sales, stay-away orders, search clauses that allowed the police to search them, 3-year felony probations. Those were some of the nice things that they did for these kids. Not to mention they drug them into the system and then told them they didn't want to be, you know, want them hanging out, and yet put them into a court system that doesn't let you get out and encourages you practically to want to do more exciting things like be involved with marijuana or be mostly marijuana.
So, yeah, I'm amazed. There is not
to mention hanging out and socializing and having a good time. Yeah. You know, you wouldn't want to, you know, let young people do that.
That kind of thing is, of course.
It disrupts business.
Questionable.
It disturbs the merchants. They really, you know, we don't want to disturb the merchants.
Cody's Books used to be an area where, is it still legal to lean against Cody's Books? I know that...
It's legal to lean against any building. It's just that the police are more or less, like I said, in the fourth block between Hay Street and Dwight Way, which is a real historical area of the 60s, and one of the reasons that sort of people came here and was magnetized to this area, street people were sort of like attracted to this area, was because of that, and People's Park is right back here, so it sort of attracted people. But now, no, they put up drug-free zone street signs. You'll see one over there. There's one up by the park and one on both sides of the street up on Hastings, across from the park, and there's probably a few up the street. And this particular block has basically become a focus for the police, that they do not want anybody hanging out here. They don't want anybody hanging out on this block because probably the significance of the 60s struggle that was on this block, and that's, like I said, the reason that it attracts so many of the young people that want to be here. So, they don't want anybody hanging out in the fourth block. We call it the fourth block.
Any resistance to this attack on basic rights of assembly and the right to be in public spaces?
The resistance seems to have sort of died down, and it's the method. Well, originally there was a crackdown by the police from mid-October up here. No, June, July, and August of last year, 98. And then that stopped. They had this real heavy presence, and then what they did, they came in afterwards, after December, like January, and ever since January, early January, what they've been doing is this what we'll call low intensity conflict, and using this mind control thing, you know, like sort of, you could probably compare it to mind control in the sense of the way that the police are using military intelligence to talk to the kids and make them see, you know, making the kids assume that the police are friendly and nice, and I'm even having TAA people like Jana, who works with the Telegraph Area Association, and supposedly represents, in quotes, the vendors on Telegraph, and yet she's telling me Officer Boga, who's a Berkeley police officer for 30 years, is up here telling kids before, you know, in the middle of this police crackdown in December, I'm witnessing him telling kids by me, well, look, man, if you guys aren't going to leave town, it's, you know, going to really discourage me, and I think you really should leave town, and even telling some of the kids, well, if you don't leave town, I'll probably find something to, you know, that I can arrest you for, so we really do, you know, would really like you to leave town. This is Boga, you know, Boga. Yeah.
Boga the Banisher.
Boga the Banisher, yeah. And Boga's a real, you know, friendly cop who's really a very sinister cop. I mean, I've known the, you know, guy since I've been here, but he's been here for 30 years, and he's very, very, very good at military intelligence and mind control and the sense of being able to coerce mentally, and psychologically coerce these young people that are hanging out on the streets to believe that they need to leave.
Mm-hmm.
They need to leave. So, Jana, you know, this Telegraph Area Association person and representing the vendors, street vendors and artists, claims that Officer Boga is such a nice guy that he wouldn't do anything like that, but she would talk to him about that. So, you know, we really wouldn't want to think that TAA, you know, would want to ban people on, you know,
not our Telegraph Avenue Association.
But we're hearing words now. I've got some rumors today that the Telegraph Area Association may be disbanding because nobody likes them. The university doesn't like them because they think they support the street
artist, and the street artists don't like TAA because they think that it's a university association. So we have some division going on. You know, I recall
within those those are opportunities for people to rise up when the ruling class splits, traditionally.
And I recall as a child the story of the two-headed giant trying to sleep up against the tree, and the little boy got trapped up in the tree, and he wasn't sure how to get down because if one head wasn't sleeping, or if one head wasn't awake, the other one was. So the little boy would drop. It was in an apple tree, and he'd drop an apple on one while it was sleeping, and we'll wake up, and the other one was awake. He said, "Why'd you do that?" "I didn't do anything." And so he said, "Okay," and he'd go back to sleep, and then the little boy would wait for the other one went to sleep, and then he'd drop an apple on the other one's head, and the other one would wake up and say, "Why did you do that? I didn't do that." So
dissension in the ranks.
Yeah, and pretty soon, I said, the little boy kept doing this, you know, hitting one while it was asleep and wake up and
we need more apples to be dropping on these people's heads.
And so finally,
up some pies.
The two-headed giant, finally, next thing you know, the two-headed giant was beating himself up.
Now we're talking.
And so
we've been talking to John Vance here on Telegraph Avenue.
Real sanity here.
Thank you for giving us this interview, John.
No problem. Maybe we can get the TAA to beat themselves in the head.
Did you ever see that picture of that man behind the desk? Taking off his glasses and facing you with a manly, friendly smile, a man of decision, a man of vision. That was me. And what was I thinking of as I sat there? What was that poetic look that crossed my features? Love of my fellow creatures, thoughts of my country, my God, my duty, thoughts of art, truth, beauty? No. I was thinking of capital gains, non-taxable corporate capital gains, with prepaid interest, Swiss banks and Swiss banks, preempted stock, with built-in tax benefits, stock by the block, residual interest, rollover premium, guaranteed aggregate. I have been uncharted seas to explore, going places, building an empire of more, 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 and more, and more, and more. Capital gains, projected investments of profit from loss of corporations, a beautiful pyramid reaching the skies, built by a go-getting, go-getting guy, with vision and brain. Who could juggle those capital gains? Capital gains. Say, did I ever tell you how I built my empire? You borrow from one to float the other. Swing your projects, here we go. I walked in a bank with nothing but a smile. Nothing in my pockets and nothing up my sleeve. But I looked like a kid who would surely get ahead. Before I walked out, the president said, "You got vision, you got vision, you got vision." Your check. With this lovely little check, a lovely little loan, built a lovely office building 40 stories high. Before I was finished, I was doing so well, I borrowed against it and built a hotel. That was vision. That was vision. That was vision. Your check. Bar from one to float the other. Swing your projects, here we go. As soon as the hotel foundation was laid, I started a theater and department stores. With the prepaid rent of the theater and the stores, I built 100 garages with elevator floors. Check, 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 check. Shopping centers, check, check. Housing projects, check, check. Schools and highways, check, check. Bailey City, check, check. Bar from one to float the other. Swing your projects, here we go. Check on project one to cover project five. Check on project five, cover project nine. Check on project 35 to cover project 96. Check on project 83 to cover project two. With a check, check here, and a check, check there. And a here, a check, and there, a check, and everywhere. Check, 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 check. Then one day, one little check just didn't come through on time. Well, my credit was a myth. The kid with vision was a crook. and that was the end of those capital gains, non-taxable corporate capital gains with prepaid interest, a beautiful pyramid reaching the skies, crumbling to dust right in front of my eyes. I wound up in chains just from juggling the beautiful capital gains.
And that was from Subways Are for Sleeping, a musical of almost 40 years ago. Still got some great tunes. This is Bathrob Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrob Spear Robert Norris, and this is your station. And your call-in number is 427-3772, 427-3772. We've got another hour and a half to go and lots of stuff to get through, but always enough time for anyone calling in, because that's really the lifeblood of the station, the community. It's too bad that that isn't also the sentiments of the City Council that held a meeting last Tuesday. For those of you who were diehard enough to attend, the City Council on Tuesday evening essentially shoveled the final shovelfuls of dirt on the attempt to reform the sleeping ban. The sleeping ban, of course, is the law that makes it criminal to sleep outside for homeless people, outside or in a vehicle. In fact, on most private property, that's invisible from public property. So, for instance, it's illegal to have a person sleeping in your driveway except for 3 days a month. Now, that's been the great liberal change of our new city council. And actually, I should probably summarize that for all of you who didn't make it down to the city council. There actually were a few surprises for those of you who've been following this program or have been picking up flyers from HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Their flyers, if you're interested in them, can be gotten by giving a call to 423-HUF, 423-4833. Anyway, the sleeping ban, which, as I said, criminalizes life at night for 500 to 1,500 homeless people if they are bold enough or foolish enough to fall asleep from 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. in a vehicle on any public property, and on private property other than a fenced-in side yard or backyard, remains in force, even though I would say a majority of the voters at the last election elected candidates that spoke against the sleeping ban, that spoke about decriminalizing poverty, that spoke of the futility, stupidity, and cruelty of arresting people for simply sleeping, doing what they have to do in the city. And the final law that was passed was pretty much the same law that passed on February 23rd. It passed again a month later. All laws have to go through two readings. The law allows, is a slight liberalization of the previous law, but doesn't, of course, address the basic issue of where and how homeless people can sleep at night without risking the policeman's roust, the midnight wake-up, the citation, and ultimately the jail cell for those who can't make it through the court labyrinth. They reduced the fines from $162 to $54 maximum. They kept the hours as they were. There was some talk of reducing the evening hours when it would be criminal to sleep, but that talk died on the vine. It was pretty preposterous anyway, the idea that, well, folks could get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, walk around till 6 in the morning, and then go back to sleep at 6. No, but they kept the hours as they were, 11 to 8:30. It's still criminal to either sleep or cover up with blankets anywhere in the city limits of Santa Cruz, except in those places I mentioned, or they retained the exceptions for vehicles in a church parking lot, up to three, no more than three vehicles in a church parking lot, two vehicles in a business parking lot, no more than two, and one vehicle for 3 days out of every calendar month in a private driveway, no more than one, and for no more than 3 calendar days. So, you know, it's kind of good practice. You get to 1/10th of the month, you get an opportunity to sleep in your vehicle in someone's driveway. You can keep shifting driveways every 3 days, so it's
start trolling for driveways, all you van dwellers out there. And that was it. That was what the city council decided. Oh, they also reduced sleeping from a misdemeanor, potential misdemeanor, to an infraction, which means it's a lower kind of crime, which is kind of a double-edged thing, because it used to be a misdemeanor in the sense that if you slept or covered up with blankets or set up a campsite twice within 48 hours, I mean, who would deign to sleep twice within 48 hours? Ask yourself that question. Then that would be potentially a misdemeanor punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. Now, only setting up a campsite, that is to say, let's say, putting a tent up over your head when it's raining, is considered to be criminal behavior that rises to a misdemeanor. But it's still a misdemeanor, for instance, to failure to appear in court for a sleeping ticket. So if you get a ticket from the police and you miss your court date, that's a misdemeanor, failure to appear. Although, I've been watching the court calendars, and a strange new fictional offense is occurring, an infraction, failure to appear. This is a mythical offense, which apparently was born in the minds of certain judges in the Santa Cruz court system. Failure to appear on the court, in the law books, in the penal code, is a misdemeanor. And I mentioned before that it was kind of a double-edged sword, that the sleeping and covering up with blankets is no longer a misdemeanor. The reason it's a double-edged sword is because even though the penalties are higher, with a misdemeanor, you get the option to have a court-appointed public defender and a jury trial. And there has never been a jury trial in a sleeping or covering up with blankets case. There have been numerous misdemeanor cases. That is to say, the late Sean Alimi was jailed for misdemeanor sleeping. The late Jay Green was jailed for misdemeanor sleeping. I believe Norman Gross was jailed for misdemeanor sleeping. But that was a form of harassment the police used to take someone to jail, because with a misdemeanor you can make a custodial arrest more easily than you can with an infraction. And you also can drag someone through the court system more easily, put a bail on them. For instance, Sean Alimi had a bail on him when he slept out at the City Hall sleepers protest peacefully in clear First Amendment right exercise as he was trying to awaken the conscience of the community to its responsibilities to homeless people in the community. That was charged as a misdemeanor, but it never eventually reached the court. Everything charged as a misdemeanor, I believe Sandria Roth also got misdemeanor sleeping charges back in 1996, but none of these cases ever make it ultimately to trial, because to do so would be to risk, first of all, jury nullification. That is to say, one juror saying, are you kidding? Give someone 6 months in jail for sleeping? No way. Won't do it. Even if he is guilty or she is guilty of sleeping. So what's happened instead is that the misdemeanor essentially simply drags people through the courts and then it gets dropped. So in a certain sense, it's good that the misdemeanor isn't there. But in another sense, it's a way of denying people their rights, because if these cases appear before judges like Meat Grinder Mulligan, the referee of Courtroom 10, which is the courtroom you're going to go to unless you disqualify Mulligan, and please, please, please disqualify Mulligan whenever you get a ticket for anything, particularly if you're homeless. The man is terminally prejudiced. He's not particularly malicious, but he's just he's one of these officious bureaucrats who sits down and says to the police officer, tell us the facts in the case, officer. And that should really tell us just what his perspective is. We have an incoming phone call.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert, this is Vinny. I had the displeasure of having to go to Department 10 today, in fact, this morning, to sign up for a bike ticket that I received, about 2 months ago, for riding the wrong way.
I hope you disqualified Mulligan.
Well, the thing about, there's a catch to this, because what happened was, I went 2 weeks ago, I showed up, and I didn't want to get him in court, I didn't want to go to him. And they said, well, you can pay the bail and come back another time and get arraigned another time. And I says, okay, well, how about if I just get an extension? So they gave me a week extension. They gave me till Friday, till last Friday to show up into court. Friday, there was no court when I showed up. So Tuesday morning, they issued a warrant for my arrest. So I had to go clear the warrant today. So I did that. And, of course, I disqualified Mulligan. But the thing is, I don't know if it's good or bad, but I ended up getting a worse judge, and that happens to be our new judge, Art Danner, former district attorney. And
it's an interesting question.
Sometimes it's like, you know, if you disqualify one bad judge, you get a worse judge.
Yeah, you know, the way to deal with that is you usually have to have a little more time to, but you can ask the people at the window in the basement of the county building, if I disqualify referee Mulligan, that's what he's called, he's not a full judge.
Yeah, he's not even a commissioner,
right,
let alone a judge.
He's sort of one step below a commissioner, and I would have to say one step below a functioning conscience-activated human being, at least in the cases I've seen him working on in terms of the sleeping ban. But you can ask the person at the court window, if I disqualify referee Mulligan, who will I get? And there's actually a schedule. And if it is someone like the new judge, Drumhead Danner, as I call him, you can say, okay, I'll come back later, and you can try again, and another judge is likely to be coming up, although not necessarily. There's
right.
a sort of schedule. So that's something people should know that you can do. There's also the possibility, and although this is still uncertain, we're going to be talking to Attorney Kate Wells about this later in the program, and I don't know what her answer is. She's hopefully going to do some research on this issue. And that is, not only do you have one absolute disqualification, but you also may be able to insist that your case be heard by a real judge. And you certainly can do this in cases involving misdemeanors.
Right.
But the question as to whether you can do this in cases involving
infractions
is open. There is some controversy on this, but I think it's something that should be tried by folks. And we are really working around the clock. I should not say around the clock, but there has been more attention given in the last few weeks because of the ICORN decision, the decision that allows homeless people to use the necessity defense in camping cases,
right.
with the idea of encouraging folks who go into tickets to know how to present a case, to say, look, I would like to make a showing that I'll plead guilty to the ticket because it's, you know, I was sleeping, but I had to. And then you have to make the necessity defense. This kind of increased focus by some legal folks around Kate Wells may give us an opportunity to show people what they can do in other ways, like disqualify judges or referees and commissioners who are not quite judges, and also, you know, as we're discussing with you, as I'm discussing with you, you know, way of seeing what the schedule is going to be about the
right.
next judge. Danner has not yet heard a case around the sleeping ban that I've heard of. There were several people who got sleeping tickets, including Tirith of Feed the People and QZ, a former Feed the People and vehicular dweller,
yeah.
who were scheduled to appear before Danner, but his court was dark. Similarly, Ray Acosta, a man who lives in his van, was also scheduled to appear before Danner, and those cases were transferred to Commissioner Salazar's court. And while I'm on the subject, Ray Acosta does go back to Commissioner Salazar's court for a sleeping ticket tomorrow at 8:30 for those of you who wish to pursue that. He's going to possibly seek a new trial because he wasn't able to attend the last one, and we'll be able to see what the post-city council climate is. I should say the post-March 23rd climate after the city council has lowered the fines on this. Although, as I said, they've made no real substantive changes
right.
in the reality of criminalizing the poor.
Let me ask you this, and then I'll take my answer off the air.
Sure.
There's a way to avoid all of this, you know, bullshit, which is what it is, running around a rat trap in this court system. And I was wondering if I could get you to talk on that a little bit, about how you can nullify your signature on the actual ticket that you receive from the officer.
Okay.
Thanks.
Sure. Thanks.
And that was the V-Man, who has his own show on civil rights and is frequently watching cops to make sure that they follow the law and respect the rights of citizens. The answer to his question is, I don't know. I wish I did. We had asked, again, Attorney Kate Wells to get on the stick on this issue, and she's been kind of swamped, as ever. I did have a conversation with B.E. Smith. In fact, I did have an interview with him. And, of course, as usual, the tape is buried God knows where, but B.E. Smith is a kind of a plain-spoken, God-fearing, cowboy hat-wearing man from Trinity County, way up in Northern California, who has taken to telling police when they stop him for not having a helmet or speeding, take me to a magistrate, and refusing to sign his ticket. Now, when Steve Argue did this, they threw him into jail. He didn't say take me to a magistrate, but he said, I'm not going to sign any ticket that says arrest me for selling newspapers, which is what happened to him back in November. But the strategy of saying take me to a magistrate is one that people have talked a lot about here in Santa Cruz, and I guess a couple of people have done it. I think there's one woman who has attempted that strategy, and Shaz, the fidget man, also attempted the strategy. And apparently it's kind of a hardline strategy if you take the hard approach, which is you refuse to sign your ticket, they take you to jail, you refuse to sign anything in jail, you get a writ of habeas corpus, you get hauled before a judge, and they have to specify what exactly they're charging you with. And then at that point, usually the proceedings evaporate and you go for a civil rights suit, according to this strategy of legal defense, and or take me to a magistrate. I've never done it myself. I have not seen it successfully used here in Santa Cruz, with the exception of Richard Quigley, who is simply such an irascible curmudgeon and so well versed in the law and so much of a terror for judges to deal with, that I think he's a special case, and I don't know if the judges would, for ordinary citizens, respond to take me to a magistrate in the fashion that B.E. Smith suggests they would. But B.E. Smith did tell me that he and Woody Harrelson, who is a friend of his apparently, the famous actor Woody Harrelson, and I should say environmental activist, are considering coming down to Santa Cruz to challenge the sleeping ban using the take me to a magistrate approach. They seem open to the idea. I think if we write them an appeal, and I encourage those of you who do favor, want to do this, want to write a letter to Woody Harrelson, give me a call at 423-HUFF, and we will sort of set this campaign in motion. I think the more publicity that we throw on the situation here in Santa Cruz, the better. And also just getting this whole practice going of having people with an alternative take me to a magistrate that deters the police from issuing these tickets and encourages the city council to overturn these stupid laws, because it seems that elections just don't do that, the better. Here's an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. This is Becky, and I'm calling because I have some sad news for our listeners.
Go ahead.
As many people may have known him as Stickman Bruce. He was also Bruce Jenkins. He passed away on March 17th. Bruce had recently been working for the campaign for 100 Wishes for Easter. Bruce had spent several years as a homeless Vietnam vet in Santa Cruz. He was well known on Pacific Avenue for the beautiful carved sticks he made and carried. The sticks had caused him some trouble with the local police, who had threatened him with ticketing or arrest should he make or sell the sticks in public. Bruce successfully fought off this police harassment and continued these activities unchallenged after that. During the Vietnam War, Bruce was a member of the Army Special Forces, for which he received an honorable discharge. His group, called the Airborne Rangers, were stationed in the highlands of Vietnam, and that is where he met a group of indigenous people, the Montagnards, that lived there. And Bruce began a spiritual journey based on the teachings of the Montagnards, and the sticks that he made, these beautiful carved sticks, were a manifestation of the spiritual awakening he carried with him. Recently, he worked for justice in the Happy John Dine police shooting death and appeared in a recent film on that subject. He also applied for a seat on the Citizens Police Review Board. His early death of a heart attack at age 47 was directly related to his long period of alienation and homelessness so many Vietnam veterans have experienced in the United States. His work for the last 30 years was to train and educate both himself and all those he encountered. He was a strong voice for individualism, freedom, and human rights. He was a strong voice against the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz. At the request of his family, no services are planned. So, sad news, the passing of Stickman Bruce.
Thank you, Becky.
Happy John Dine was a friend of mine, lived here by the sea. Down on the streets of Santa Cruz, he always laughed at me. Happy and I went to church one night, thank God, and ate our fill. Asked him if he had any money, give me a fake dollar bill. Where is Happy? he's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave, oh where's Happy? Shot down today. And it's, yes, the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. Happy was as harmless as a butterfly. Loved everyone he met. He never left the 60s. Didn't really care for the internet. One day he was grooving to some tunes, doing the happy bop, when a bullet entered his chest. Came from a Santa Cruz cop. Where is Happy? Shot down today. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where is Happy? He's gone away. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. Now people like Happy, I do believe. Heaven is great, great spirits. You know, like whatever you got here, less of, you got more there. Could happen. So I think he's up there. I think he's looking down. And he's probably saying, hey man, right on. I know you. Power to the people. Where is Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Where is Happy? Shot down today. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to say. Yeah, I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to say.
March 24th, 1998, and we're talking,
9, 1999,
and we're talking at about
3:45
to Ray Acosta. Hi, Ray.
Hello, sir.
We're in your trailer, and you currently, you're back in home sweet home, at least as far as you can do it in Santa Cruz, when it's illegal to sleep in a vehicle, unless you can find special circumstances. But you were looking for some real housing down in Monterey, right?
Correct, sir. Most definitely.
And you heard about a program called what?
Well, sir, I go to a vet clinic at Old Fort Ord. They have a veterans clinic, and I go to get my
I go for medical visas, you know,
and go see doctors, et cetera.
What was the name of the program you heard about?
FORA. F-O-R-A.
What did you first hear about?
Oh, I'd say in 98.
And you heard some glowing things, or?
And they put in context.
If I understand, there's
I think it started with the McKinney Act. Yes. If I understand correctly, a lot of the military bases are being closed down. Specifically in the Bay Area, the big ones are Fort Ord, Alameda Naval Air Station, and the Presidium of okay. Being that I'm dealing with the clinic at Fort Ord, if I understand, at one time there was the 7th Light Infantry Division was permanent party there, which was the 7th Light Infantry Division.
But in any case, there was a lot of military that moved out, and now there's housing, supposedly all this empty stuff.
Exactly, sir. Most definitely. At one time, Fort Ord housed 28,000 people. You know,
the program FORA is supposedly advertising for vets for looking for housing.
Or? There's a vet group called Veterans Transition Center at Fort Ord.
Yeah.
There's supposedly other entities that are coming in. If I understand, I went to FORA on Tuesday. This is Wednesday. And I talked to them for about a half hour.
What is FORA?
Fort Ord Reuse Authority.
What do they do?
They're the ones that are actually parceling out the property to the entities. The big ones are County of Monterey, City of Seaside, City of Marina, and City of Delray Oaks. And also UC Monterey Bay.
I guess they're leaving the vets out of this, huh?
Exactly. But put it in context, the group that I got hooked up yesterday is called Veterans Transition Center.
And the gentleman that I met and spoke to, he told me
specifically, look, we got 40 units of housing for vets, quote unquote. And I talked to him for one...
What was his name?
But in any case,
Mr. Dowling told you that the 40 were available, what, for immediate occupants?
No, sir, no. Let me put it in context again. When I talked to him for half an hour yesterday, he said, look, we got almost the last piece of this pie, and what they gave us was 40 units. And I said, well, what's going to happen? Well, long story short, he said, look, they're putting a lot of, we got to do this, we got to do that to get it up to snuff, up to standard, up to...
Next year sometime?
Next year, maybe. And then
he's out of, what, 13,000 units, supposedly?
I don't know exactly. But anyway, the point is, he said, look, also, it's not going to be housing. It's almost, he says, no, we're going to be more like transitional.
Oh,
And I said, wait a minute.
It's a program.
And I said, wait a minute. I said, look, if you're going to get 40 units, and he said, yeah. But then again, he said, no, we're going to be more transitional. We're going to get back to come in, but we're going to be showing them the back door in the context, hey, your holding pattern here. You're not here to saddle here. No. You're holding pattern. And we're going to put the onus on you and say, hey, once you're here, what are your plans to get out?
Yeah, we'll teach you how to write checks and manage your budget and go to the bathroom. That's right.
Exactly. Well, the point to that is, I said, look.
Housing is what you're looking for.
Exactly. Low income, I don't know how you would put it, but housing. I'll put it in context. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I spent all day at Fort Ord. I went to twice. I was at the clinic, so I really checked out everything, and I've seen the massive amounts of townhouses, condos, apartments, barracks that are there. They're all boarded up, but they're there. Mm-hmm. I hate to sound simplistic, but it's almost like just turn on the power,
going
turn on
waste.
The water, and you got housing. You're living like,
well, you know,
you are living large.
I was arrested twice for occupying housing up in the Presidio at the Weary Housing in order to open it up to homeless use.
Let me put it here,
it's
Robert.
Still vacant as far as... Actually, they may actually now be using it for students or some bullshit.
We need to go there. I really want to take you over there and show you what I've seen.
You don't have to show me. I believe you.
And we can go check out the bureaucratic con games that...
Oh, I don't even have to check that out with you. I believe you on that, too.
So
the question is, what do we do about it?
Well, let's put it in this... I'm going to bring up this point to the... Veterans
Transition
Center. Look, since you're saying you're going to have these 40 units for like just transitory, just holding pattern, we're not going to. There's a vet home in Yountsville. It's a veterans home in Yountsville. Long story short.
Making sure.
Okay, I said, look, it's for veterans that are for whatever reason they can't. Anyway, it's a vet's home. Why don't they open up a satellite or a mini vet home on post at Fort Ord where vets can go live with dignity?
What did they say?
Well, I haven't brought up to this point, but I'm going to bring it up to them. In the context, I said, okay, so you're saying these 40 units are just transitory, but what about there's much more housing that can be used for a permanent vet home?
Okay.
In the context that they can be, for whatever reason, the vets need somewhere to live with dignity.
Now, Ray, are you interested in starting a group to... pursue this, you know, like get a bunch of vets together. What we can do is, of course, if vets interested in getting in touch with Ray, want to give a call to 423-HUFF, I can pass on a message to him, and Ray, you're going to be getting your own voicemail soon,
exactly,
I believe.
Sir.
So, thanks for giving us the update. In essence, you believe it's pretty much the Fort Ord deal is a scam, and don't waste your time, that's the story
at
the moment.
Well, let's put it in context. The housing is there. I've gotten up with Senator Feinstein, I've gotten up with Congressman Sam Farr here in Santa Cruz. I'm trying to move a mountain, but I got
to
start.
So give a call to 423-HUFF
exactly.
If you want to get into the try to open up some of this housing for real use. Thank you, Ray.
You're welcome.
And Ray will be going to court tomorrow, as I mentioned, at 8:30, to deal with a sleeping ticket he got in his van from an officer who claimed that he heard Ray snoring inside, and what was I don't know if it was soundproof, but it was quite a, you know, it was your self-contained van. Who knows whether the officer was telling the truth or not. Officer shouldn't be doing this kind of thing anyway, and that's at 8:30 in Department 2 tomorrow, Friday, March 26th. What do we do now? That is really the question. That was a question many of us had with all that vacant housing at Fort Ord boarded up, the boarded up housing in the Presidio down in San Diego at the Naval Training Center. The answer of the Oakland Union of the Homeless back in 1989-90 was simply to march in, tear the boards off the vacant housing, and to start fixing up the housing, and doing so in a fashion that elicited community support, and that if the police came and took you away, well, they took the bust. But they were able to open up significant numbers of buildings, at least significant numbers of spaces for families by doing this under the leadership of Dorothy Hall and Terry Messman, who now edits the newspaper Street Spirit. So maybe direct action is the answer here, that if the city, the county, the military, the great liberals refuse to respond to this, that we have to take the action ourselves, to take the lead ourselves. Religious Witness with the Homeless and Homes Not Jails in San Francisco has been pushing that in that direction for in San Francisco for the 477 odd units of, as I mentioned before, weary housing on the Presidio up there that was abandoned by the military and now, of course, is being parceled out as to be developed in a kind of a, you know, feed the rich approach. We've got to act around that. And again, the ways are not entirely clear, but I think that some action is better than no action. And I know I talked today to activist Just Man Jim Costner, who's working with the Mumia Coalition, and he has his own coalition to end the sleeping ban. And I believe he is going to be pushing for protests, demonstrations, and closer organization among the folks who are now beginning to realize that the city council just simply not only isn't willing to take the relatively primitive baby steps necessary, the baby step of letting homeless people sleep somewhere, for God's sake, and that in order to get this done, we're the ones that are going to have to take those steps. We'll have to do so in a fashion that essentially puts the spotlight on the community before itself and before the state and the nation. So those interested in this can give a call to 423-HUFF. We're looking at alternatives, at roads to pursue. We don't know which way to go yet. But we think that there is enough really strong sentiment out there that something has to be done around this issue, that now is as good a time as any. Around the sleeping ban issue, I also have an announcement. My hardworking producer has been able to secure the consent of Michael Rotkin, who's a council member on the Santa Cruz City Council, to join us here on the air as an in-studio guest on April 8th. That'll be 2 weeks from today, on Thursday evening at 6:30. He's going to be facing off, I hope, against David Silva, though we haven't got a confirmation from David yet. We were thinking of importing a grizzly bear, but decided that would be inappropriate and might cause consternation in the studio. So Mike Rotkin, who is probably the most articulate opponent of civil rights for the homeless, as I would describe it. I'm sure he would describe it otherwise. I, of course, have denounced him repeatedly and will continue to do so as someone who concocts an argument a minute of the most facile and makeshift sort. And I should say frequently his arguments are discredited before they start, and yet he continues to use the same arguments. The magnet theory is a typical example of a Rotkin argument that has been completely discredited. I mean, last night at City Council, one of the few good things that this task force to examine the camping ordinance did, headed by Catherine Byers, was to establish kind of authoritatively that ending sleeping bans does not result in a mass influx of homeless people to those areas where they happened. There may be problems that develop for other reasons, but one of them is not a mass influx of people. And that has been one of Rotkin's endless claims, well amplified and put out repeatedly. It's a kind of a scare story for folks who want to consider restoring basic civil rights to homeless people. In 1996, Mike Rotkin spoke of, when he was mayor, 10 million people coming to Santa Cruz if the sleeping ban were lifted in parts of the city. I think he's revised his estimate downward to several hundred thousand. And interestingly enough, at the last council meeting, Keith Sugar, council member, said that he had been waiting for a month to get some kind of information as to what specific evidence of a magnet effect, and of course none was forthcoming. As far as I know, based on my inquiries to in Broward County, Florida, in Santa Barbara, California, even in Eugene, there's no significant change when laws that criminalize homeless people are lifted or lessened. Now, there is the question, for instance, of the campground that we had here at the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, and that may be a topic that will come up on the April 8th debate. It's too bad we don't have all the documentation some folks